Welcome to The Mountain Gardener with your host, Ken Lane. Gardening can be challenging, but with Ken's tips, tricks, and local advice, you'll reap huge rewards. Now welcome your host, Ken Lane.
And welcome to this week's edition of The Mountain Gardener. This is your host, Ken Lane, here every week talking about the landscapes of northern Arizona. And this is a funky year. It's just different. 2 weeks ago, snow. Now it's just gorgeous weather. It's what you'll find is at altitude, the mountains, especially of the southwest, Arizona, this season, it starts to get really warm and then it gets cool again. Warm, cool. It's not a straight line, smooth transition from winter to spring to summer. It's a violent temperature swing back and forth. It's unique to high elevation gardens. And so you folks in the Midwest, you just go, you're freaking out. You're going, I don't understand. Where'd this come from? I thought we were done. There's frost that's going to happen. There's some snow. There's always one last skiff of snow that happens in March sometime, I predict, somewhere. We'll see how it plays out. But that's good. Your spring blooming plants, they love this kind of weather. My new folks from the tropics, they're coming to the garden center and they're asking, well, gosh, should I be worried about, can I plant my forsythia, lilacs, quince, and they just name it off. And they're just afraid that the cold weather is going to bother their plants. No, they actually like it. They need it. In fact, most of the early spring bloomers, they need the cold in order to bloom correctly, to bloom well. What'll happen is hopefully it will knock back the insects, so they'll bloom longer, stronger, brighter colors. That's what I'm thinking will happen. That's what it feels like this year. If you were contemplating putting a new lilac, a new forsythia, a new flowering quince, a new rhododendron, a new whatever, we just had some Lily of the Valley come in that are completely, utterly loaded with flowers. It had to be one plant, 100 or more flowers on this thing. The most sweet, fragrant, perennial evergreen, grows about knee-high you've ever seen. It's best to plant that before it actually blooms. So the forsythia, a few of them just opened up this week. With the thaw, the last snow pile went away, and boom, they just opened up. If you can put those in the ground before they open up, they'll bloom longer for you, stronger. The plant won't necessarily be any healthier, but you will get to enjoy the fragrance and the color longer than, let's say, if you were to wait till you pick out that most beautiful blooming flowering quince you've ever seen, and it's in full bloom, you take it home from the garden center, you go plant it many times, it gets stressed out going, I don't know about this. Or the wind blows it off from the back of the pickup truck to your house. You're planting this for the beauty. Enjoy the beauty and plant it early. So you are perfectly fine to plant now. In fact, we had planting crews out all week this week. I mean, they are busy. Things are gearing up. And what we're finding is it's not just a tree or a shrub. These are larger plantings. I mean, like whole hedgerows. I love it. The privacy thing is back. I've been looking at that lot for 10 years. And now, can you believe it? They're building a house on it. I want privacy. So they would have been best if they'd put that hedgerow up, the row of Arizona cypress or Italian cypress or junipers up beforehand, red tip botania, cotonia aster. There's dozens of choices. It'd be better if you could have put them in at least 5 years ago. Many of these big, strong, large plants, we've got a saying. We go, first year they creep, second year they leap. And so the first year they're sitting there and they're rooting, they're not growing much. They'll grow a little bit, but you're out there sipping coffee, watching a sunrise, or sipping wine, watching a sunset, and your neighbors are over there doing the same thing on their patio, and you're looking at each other. They don't grow that much the first year. Once they start rooting out, once they get their feet underneath them, the next year they quadruple. I mean, they just go whoomp. The growth is dramatically more the next year. Also, something to watch as we come into the planting season, this is just top of mind stuff. When you're planting, this is a change from what your grandparents suggested. They said, start small, start bare root, cut it way back till there's nothing but a stub in the ground. It will grow faster and stronger. It'll catch up. It'll grow bigger than the fully rooted thing. That is not true at all. We don't find that, especially in heavy clay soils where it's alkaline, lots of wind, bright sun, the mountains of Arizona. What you're truly planting when you're into the zone, a fruit tree, a new vine, a shrub, a perennial, what you're really planting is a root. The bigger the root you have, the stronger the growth will be that first season, first several seasons. Yes, eventually a small one can finally catch up. You know, when a 20-foot fruit tree, who can tell there's 6-inch difference between, 19 and a half feet and 20 feet? I can't tell. But early on, it's dramatic. You can definitely tell. And we see this with the returns. You know, all of our plants are heavily warranted. You know, 2 years, you can run over our plants with the truck. Bring it back in 4 months and we'll replace it. It's just part of what the whole retail plant game is. But really what we find is the small ones are the ones that are replaced. The bigger the root, the less the replacement, the stronger the plant grows, the more plant you have at the end of the season. And so when our planting crews are out, we much prefer planting bigger ones because we just know they're going to have a deeper root zone. They're going to have more root mass to get through the hotter summer that's to follow. They'll make it through a harsh winter where it's really wet and gooey and snowy. They just have more roots to make them stronger. This is really important in an arid, high-altitude climate. You're really buying a root, not a plant. So the bigger the root you have, the more roots underneath this plant, the stronger it's going to grow. Secondly, a couple things you should be aware of, and we're loading the garden center up. We've got our spring open house next week. We are filling this entire garden center up. I mean, semi after semi load of plants coming in, all departments from herbs and vegetables to annual color to perennial flowers to fruit trees to shade trees to evergreens. They're all coming in. A couple departments are tricky. A couple types of plants are really, really tricky. And you can be duped into buying the wrong one or the stronger one. One, fruit trees. Fruit trees need to be about seven years old before they're old enough to start fruiting. Well, if you head to your local box store and you buy it out of that warehouse and it's been in the dark for a month and a half, and now you buy it, bring it home, and you got a great price on it. But it's a whip. It's a younger tree. It's only 2 to 3 years old. And so it'll be 4 years before it's old enough to produce fruit. Make sure you're buying a tree that is of fruiting age. If you want a fruit tree, don't wait 7, 10 years. Have fruit this year. Plant it. Secondly, on that same vein, there's two types of flowers. And garden centers, drugstores, grocery stores are all loading up now. They're getting ready for the season. Perennials are those plants that come back every year. And so they're typically more expensive, usually about twice as much, not quite twice, but maybe 40% more than an annual, a pansy or a snapdragon or a dusty miller or your annual flowers. Typically you can seed that and 6 weeks later, you'll have a crop that can be sold. So your higher turning, your big box stores, they like to have annuals. They just want to crank it through. They get more profit per square foot in the greenhouse. Whereas perennials, they almost always have to be 2 years old before they're old enough to produce flowers. A perennial will produce a few flowers the first year. The second season, they're just covered. So this is echinaceas and galardias and salvias and all the artemisias, all the natives, penstemons. They all need to be 2 years old. Don't get duped into buying a young one, little seedlings, or you're not going to get much color this year. It'll be next year or the year after we actually see some perennial color. Do your homework, ask some questions, and go, how old is this plant? And if they don't know, guaranteed, almost guaranteed, it's this year's plant. It won't produce much flower. So perennials, fruit trees, they got to be a certain age before they really become rock stars in the gardens. Be right back.
You've been listening to The Mountain Gardener with Ken Lane, owner of Waters Garden Center in Prescott. Join him every week for timely garden advice right for the gardens. Visit Ken where he can be found throughout the week at Waters Garden Center in Prescott. The colors of spring are bursting at Waters' 57th Spring Open House.
Talk directly to our farmers as they show off the newest flowers, brightest evergreens, and freshest new bloomers.
Friday, we show off this year's showiest plant introductions.
Saturday and Sunday, it's impromptu garden classes, sidewalk art, cornhole contest, and drawings.
Join the garden fun at Waters Garden Center's 57th Spring Open House this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 15th through 17th.
1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
Hi, Lisa with the plants of the week and our Goshiki holly.
Goshiki translates from Japanese as holly with five colors. Its new leaves emerge red, then turn green.
The entire top of this holly is draped in colors of cream, white, gray, yellow, and green.
This evergreen makes the perfect accent, hedge, or evergreen container for its all-round good looks.
A really nice plant that shines through winter is just $39.
Waters Garden Center, where people who love Japanese gardens, they love to shop.
You've been listening to Ken Lane, the Mountain Gardener. Green thumbs learned while working in the Family Garden Center. Now welcome back to the Mountain Gardener.
And we are back with Lisa Waters Lane in the studio. She comes each week with your garden questions. Just the Garden Center, we've seen this wave of people starting to show up.
So spring the thaw, is here.
So the thaw happened and, yeah. And all of a sudden there's more excitement. So yes. How many do I need?
Right.
What's the best? I see this thing. Do I need to be worried? So it's exciting.
It is fun. It's fun to see people out in the nursery yard again. A lot of them are just going, I had to get out of the house. I had to get my fix. To come get my fix. So
I think, too, we were seeing, we were seeing folks during the snows and that kind of stuff, but they were in for house plants, seed, and they were planning. They were looking at stuff. Now we've got all this new stuff. Mm-hmm. So now they're taking what they saw and going, oh, there's even more choices. And now they're starting to commit and they're be in the yard and they're starting to plant. So that's exciting to see.
Right. Well, the trucks are rolling. We've gotten some beautiful trees in. And boy, if you want some first picks of some nice trees, now is the time to be in looking at those.
You know, I Instagrammed that last truckload of trees that came in. I'm stunned at the number of people that saw that. It's just me walking through. They aren't even untied. They're on pallets out in the parking lot.
No leaves.
Nothing. Just a bunch of twigs. People are going, oh, I've been waiting. Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. It feeds on Instagram, then it crosses over to Facebook. So I don't know which one. It's the same video, but it's the social media stuff. It's like a dream for entrepreneurs, small business people. But it's also overwhelming. I don't know how it all works. It just does.
I know. I feel like a Luddite. I really don't, because I don't Facebook. I don't Instagram. My kids are always like, Mom.
Yeah.
I'm like,
how do you keep up with the grandkids? Marco Polo. Video conferencing.
There are ways.
That's right.
Yeah. Mail. No.
Yeah, right. When was the last time you mailed anything? A stamp?
Been a while.
Where do we keep the stamps?
And where do you put it on the envelope?
How do you write a check again?
Oh boy, that's a tough one, yeah.
So garden questions, what do we got?
Well, our first question is from Gary. He would like to know, is now the time to start feeding his lawn? And then he also wants to know, he's heard you talk about the humic acid.
Yeah.
Kind of just needs to use it at the same time, different. Is it a fertilizer? What's different about it as opposed to?
Sure. Good questions. And it's time. So March is your time for lawns. So I know we just had a big storm the end of February, 1st of March. But March is actually your best time to seed, to mow, to get ready, to extend, to add seed, add sod. This is the month. Now in October are your two peak windows for grasses. This is lawn-type grasses. So what do you do? So go on to watersgardencenter.com. I'll just start with that. In the upper right-hand corner, there's a search bar. Just type in how to feed a lawn. Mm-hmm. And this will come up, the article, what to do and when to do it. It's all right there. So if you want it actually in print, but here's the gist of it. In the month of March, you start putting something on your lawn every month, and you rotate between all-purpose plant food and humic acid. You start with food because you want to encourage new growth, and the bird guano that's in that food will just get it to ignite with new growth like right now. I mean, you put it on now, pray for rain that we've got coming up, or water it in, and within, by this time next week, you will see new blades of grass, just like that. So you want to encourage new growth, but then what happens as grass grows, it starts to choke itself out. You get thatch or this dead matted material. So humic acid doesn't actually feed the grass. It encourages deeper roots, so you get a hardier, lower water use on your grass. But mainly it feeds the microbials in the ground. It's a soil fertilizer. It feeds the microbes, mycorrhizals that are in the ground so that the grass wants to root deeper. And those are the things that eat. They feed off of thatch. So if you put your humic acid on, you'll never have to thatch or aerate. Again, you're going to have a deep-rooted lawn that's so thick that weeds wouldn't dare try to get in there. So you fertilize 1 month, humic acid the other month. You just trade off between March and October. You start with the food, then you transition. April, you'd go humic acid. May, you go food. June, you just switch it off through the growing season, which for grass is March through October. Mm-hmm. And that's how you do it, and that's why you're doing it. I would say humic acid also works on vegetables. Anything you need a lot of flowers or you know, root crops like carrots that you're putting in now, radishes, potatoes, things like that, you'll get more roots, more harvest mm-hmm. by using humic acid.
And isn't humic acid also good for like the native ponderosas oh, yeah. and pinions and
yeah.
all of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say anything that's stressed out, for sure. You want more roots on things, humic acid. But I don't want folks doing that instead of fertilizing. Mm-hmm. You can do it in addition, mm-hmm. but you need to start fertilizing now. That's the most important thing the month of March, fertilize. Mm-hmm. And then in addition, let's say for the grass specifically, this is specialized. Humic acid will make life easier, make it more lush. Your lawn will stay green through winter. Others won't. So okay. That's how you do it.
Good to know. Our next question is from Sherry. She wants to know, what's the maximum distance you can plant, like apple trees that need the cross-pollination yeah. on them? What's the maximum distance apart?
Oh, maximum is within eye shot. So it can be hundreds of yards away. Bees are not very smart. I know we give them way more credit than they really have, but really, if you put a barn or a building in between the trees, they aren't smart enough to find it. So but as long as they got a straight flight, like they're like beelining straight from one tree to the next, you're perfectly fine. I wouldn't put a forest between them. I'd make them in the front yard or anywhere in the backyard or the back part of the property is good enough. As long as they can see it, mm-hmm. they'll go right for it when they're in bloom. They'll just go from this one, pollinate. They'll go right to the next one, pollinate. As soon as they can't see it, they're like a two-year-old. Play with a toy? Look, it's gone now! They're like a bee. Bees are like a two-year-old. So make sure they can see it and you're good to go.
So I have another question on apple trees specifically. Is it true you can use a crab apple to pollinate a regular apple?
That is true. Yeah,
does
crab apples.
Does it matter what type of crab?
Well, generally it's going to be a fruiting type of crab apple. So that's mm-hmm. where we get into the caveats. Okay. You have ornamental crab apples. Mm-hmm. They're just pretty. Flamboyant reds, gorgeous pinks, deep whites, I mean, whiter than normal. Mm-hmm. That's crab apples. They're made for the flowers, and they can put a little tiny fruit on, but they typically bloom earlier than a regular crab apple. Mm-hmm. So the main thing with pollination, you want them to bloom at the same time so the flowers are open so they can pollinate at the same time. If one variety blooms before the other, it's not in bloom. It can't help pollinate. So it's more of that. So okay. Yes, your grandparents' crab apple would do it. Probably the ones you're going to want in your yard, No, get a regular apple.
Good to know. Yeah. Okay. Our last question is from Valerie. She's new to the area up from the valley. Of course,
Welcome.
They have a different growing season than we do. And she wants to know what kind of veggies and things can she get started now?
Pretty much anything you learned down the valleys. I was just talking to someone from Hawaii. It said, you just need to reboot and start over because everything you know, erase, start over. Mm-hmm. So the seasons are totally different. So we start planting vegetables, flowers, in the month of March, into February. That'll be your cool season vegetables. Anything leafy, you're harvesting the flowers. Let's say broccoli, cauliflower, lettuce, spinach, kales, root crops you start now. Your carrots and radishes and beets, they all start now. Our last frost date up here is about Mother's Day. End of April, first week in May, somewhere in there we get our last frost. That's when you start putting in things that put on a fruit. So tomatoes and cucumbers and eggplants, that's your summer crops. Right now it's all the spring crops. And you'll be tempted middle of April, you'll be tempted to put the tomatoes in. Yeah. And you're fine to do that as long as you protect them, because look at that one last freak frost. Mm-hmm. It'll damage the top of it and it just will, you'll have to start over again. Whereas in the valley, they've already started. I mean, they've started putting all that stuff in 2 months ahead of us.
Right.
So here we don't do that. So just remember that demarcation. And that's one. Come into the garden center. I have a garden calendar for us. Just ask for it. It's free. We'll just let you have it. It tells you exactly when do you plant beets, carrots, tomatoes, cucumbers, pumpkins. Come in and ask for it. Be right back with Ken and Lisa Lane and the Mountain Gardeners.
You're listening to Ken Lane, a.k.a. the Mountain Gardener. Ken can be found throughout the week in Prescott at Waters Garden Center. Listen each week as he answers timely garden questions unique to mountain gardens. Plants are a lot like puppies. They need care, water, and food.
You wouldn't forget to feed your puppies, so don't forget to feed your plants.
Waters 744 All-Purpose Plant Food is a gourmet meal for your plants.
The only food for Arizona plants for the nutrients they need for big blooms, a hefty harvest, and tremendous trees, all naturally.
It's time to feed your plants with 744 All-Purpose Plant Food from Waters Garden Center in Prescott.
Let's talk poop.
Hey, I'm Tommy at Waters Garden Center. Ken and Lisa are out right now, so I snuck in to remind you that it's time to add some manure to your garden.
It's been a wet winter, and your soil is, well, pooped. Waters Barnyard Manure adds nutrients to get your garden growing. It's organic and odorless, so we really can say our poop don't stink. Buy 6 bags or more. They're only $5.99. Now that's a load of crap.
Tommy, what's going on?
Oh, poop, gotta go. Natural, safe, odorless, and organic at Waters Garden Center.
You've been listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Join the conversation every week as he answers timely garden questions. Email Ken a question directly from your phone to his desktop through the web at watersgardencenter.com. That's Waters with two T's, gardencenter.com. Now welcome back your host, Ken Lane.
Now we are, the planting season's here, March starts it. There's a few things you really need to wrap up from the winter gardens. You need to finish your pruning. This is important. All pruning needs to be done this month. So you got a couple weeks left and you need to knock this thing out, including your roses. So roses need to be pruned back. Typically, the ideal month in the mountains of Arizona are the month of March. The deserts, they prune them back in November, December. Here, we wait, let the winter beat them up. You let them get covered in snow and let that freeze-thaw happen to them. And then we come in the month of March, because typically we are done with the severe cold, the damaging cold that can get onto roses. And then we clean them up. So we prune them back to about knee-high, 3 to 5 stems, canes coming up. Your best flowers are produced on new wood for roses. And that's why we really want to cut them back. Same thing with grapes. You really need to cut these things back hard if you want to produce good big clusters of grapes. The best grapes are produced on new wood. And so there's a certain thing, there's processes for that. This show is not about how to prune. We've already covered that a month or two ago. But mainly just put it on your radar. You should just feel the pressure to get it done. I'm going to cut back my thyme lawn. So those are all the front perennial beds are going to be cut back with a lawnmower. We just go back over it, even it out. I'll go through the lawn. I'll take some topsoil to something that kind of a heavier mix, kind of grate it out over there and level things out so I can get rid of the worm castings and just make it a smoother, nicer lawn appeal. You really need to get back. You need to cut back some of your herbs. Rosemaries can get kind of woody sometimes. So I went back and strategically, surgically, cut back some of the big woody canes or vines or branches on those rosemaries, lavenders, so that they produce more fresh leaves that can be used in the kitchen, can be used in recipes, whatever. So my salvias, they've all been cut back. That's the autumn sage, all colors. So I generally keep those up intact so that they're kind of sensitive. They're a borderline drought-hardy native plant. So they're zone 8, zone 7. So depending on your elevation, they can get damaged in winter. So I leave the structure up, then I cut them back real hard in the month of March. So the point being, make sure you finish this stuff up. If you don't know how, visit your local garden center. They can hone you right in. They probably have handouts that tell you how best to go. Take an iPad or a phone in, show them what you got, and they can show you how to best strategically cut that thing back. And then there's always the internet and books. It's just sometimes the internet, you never know what you're going to get. It's the screwiest stuff on there. Some of it is totally wrong. Some of it is right on the money. Books are probably better for really doing the detail work of gardening. Secondly, you need to spray for bugs. Take the entire yard and just hose the whole thing down. This is going to be like appalling to some of you organic folks, but use an organic oil. You can use a bug killer that gets all those aphids and ciliads and thrip, and we're seeing whitefly, all kinds of crazy stuff. The scale will be coming out momentarily on your pine trees. Put the oil on, and that on a hose and sprayer, oil everything down. It's completely organic. It's the least expensive thing you can use, and it helps you start from scratch. Helps you at least not have eggs sitting there waiting to hatch and come out at you. And the bugs, they are hatching. I've seen spiders in my basement. I've seen moths flying around. The aphids, I'm sure, are already starting to come out. So you need to clean the yard up. Lastly, fertilize everything in the yard. Give them a good, strong, balanced plant food, an actual food. So many of your landscapes, they're starving. They haven't been fed in years, and they look emaciated and weak and yellow, and they haven't bloomed in years, and your iris just are looking overgrown. Your evergreens are thin and wispy. That should not be the case. Those are all... those can all be corrected with a few key nutrients. In fact, I'll go deeper on that. So we'll go deep into how did I just finish fertilizing my entire landscape at the garden center here at Waters Garden Center, and also my own personal homes. All the landscapes are treated the same, from trees and shrubs to roses to the thyme lawn to perennials to my natives. They all have the same approach. I've got a few different recipes that I kind of customize. But let me go deeper into that. But just to recap this segment, make sure you finish your pruning. Get rid of those bugs. Start clean. Don't let last year's insects come back at you and reinfect almost instantly. I mean, right off the bat, they'll be at you. And then fertilize everything in the landscape. Those are three things that'll be a game changer. They'll make a difference in your landscape this year. So for marked more fragrance and more color. Be right back with Lisa Watersley in the studio right after this.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for timely garden advice right for higher elevations. Guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season. Oh no, my pine trees look terrible.
Never fear, Plant Protector is here.
Plant Protector? From Waters Garden Center?
My Super Strength Protector destroys pine scale, bark beetle, and aphids. Just water into the soil, and your trees are protected from the inside out for the year.
Thank you, Plant Protector.
You can always find Plant Protector at Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
In a new place, it's difficult to know who to trust, how to get help at the house, and which nursery will simply do what they say they'll do.
At Waters Garden Center, we're here to help, in the landscape at least.
Our team of plant ambassadors know your neighborhood, the plants that add color, increase privacy, and add fragrance and beauty.
And we can show you exactly how to plant locally, or we have teams to do all the work for you.
We are Ken and Lisa Lane, and we guarantee our plants will live up to every promise here at Waters Garden Center.
You're listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Mountain gardening is very rewarding, with a few of Ken's tips, tricks, and garden shortcuts sure to turn your thumbs even greener. Now welcome back to The Mountain Gardener.
And we have a very special guest. She comes to us each and every week, actually. Lisa Waters Lane comes in the studio, and this is her entire segment, just all about her. What is she seeing out in the garden? A different set of eyes. And so welcome back into the studio, Lisa.
Thank you.
My very special guest.
I'm still a guest, huh?
Well, you're more than that. After this will be 32 years together.
We're heading
actually,
that way.
Together we dated for
5 years
through college, mm-hmm. basically.
Right.
And then I got married right after that. Four mm-hmm. kids later and a couple businesses later. Actually, we opened our first business together. It's kind of history that people don't want to hear. Before we were even married, we were doing stuff uh-huh. in college.
We were.
So we would
young and foolish. Thought we could do it.
Yeah, we. You know, younger, you do get a little bold.
That's a good thing.
Bold.
Yeah.
Now we actually learn stuff and we have more to lose. So oh, yeah. you kind of go, I don't want to make that mistake again. So you almost, it's a detriment sometimes in small business.
It can be.
So we put an ad in the Arizona ASU newspaper, newspaper man from way back. We would take your wedding bouquet and convert it into silks. Mm-hmm. So we just take the bridal, or sometimes you do bridal wedding stuff in silk. So you were a florist. And
that's when silks were really popular. What was that, like mid 80s.
Don't date us. Don't tell them when we went to college.
That's when like, ooh, silk flowers, you can keep them forever. And now you're like, ooh, who wants that ratty old thing?
Dusty old thing. Every time I look at them, I get hay fever. Yeah. Anyway. But we've always been mm-hmm. entrepreneurial at heart.
Well, you have. I guess I have too.
Yeah. Although, well, you grew up in the family business.
Yeah. But I have a degree in education. So explain that one.
Teachers are great. What are you talking about?
Of course they're great.
We need more teachers. And that's half of why we do teaching garden classes every mm-hmm. weekend is that whole teacher mentality. If we educate someone on mm-hmm. how to garden, they'll hopefully come back and use your plants to garden with. And you create that loyalty. And it's just, there's this thing. You remember your first grade teacher. You just, there's this bond that you have. And you got it.
My first grade teacher, we always called her Mrs. Flashbulb, but I don't think that was her name. It was Flash something, but you know, when you're in first grade, it's like, what? We always called her Mrs. Flashbulb, but I'm sure she hated it.
She's probably still in town. Prescott's a small place.
You know, she wasn't a spring chicken back when I was in first grade. So
what do you got for us this segment before we insult all of our first grade teachers? None of them want to.
Oh, they're wonderful, wonderful. Well, for some bizarre reason, this week I have been hit up by people going, I have shade in my yard, which is so different from our normal, I have beating hot sun. Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't think about the colors and the variety of things that can go into a shaded part of your yard.
I mean, all of us have a north side of our house. All of us pretty much have a covered front patio or back patio that's got mm-hmm. a covering. And that's where it's harder to grow some of those sunny, bright flowers that need mm-hmm. the sun. That's a place where you put shade plants, either in mm-hmm. a container or off the side, you know, gardens,
right,
kind of
right.
stuff. So great idea.
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, get here and they say, well, I've heard you can't grow rhododendrons here. I've heard you can't grow azaleas here. And I'm like, you can. You just got to be careful where you put them. Shade. Be selective.
Yeah.
So we do get a variety of rhodies and azaleas in that are absolutely gorgeous. And the colors on those particular plants when they bloom are just spectacular.
Nothing like them. I think it's they have darker foliage, mm-hmm. and the colors are so bright on the dark foliage that they're stunning. They're brighter than some of the lighter colors. Some of your sunny things, they'll go more yellow on you or have muted colors. Here, they're like fluorescent. Mm-hmm. Turn a light switch and whoop, they're in bloom.
There's a real pretty one. I think it's a new one out this year, rhododendron, called cherry cheesecake. Now, I love the name because, you know, you can't beat cherry cheesecake. But the picture, of course, it's not blooming yet. It's got the buds set, huge buds on it. But the picture is a white blossom with a bright pink edge to it.
Oh, neat.
Looks fabulous. Variegated,
two-toned. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, neat. But same basic evergreen foliage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The bigger
is it
leaf
dwarfed
to it.
Or bigger? How
no,
tall
it's
does
the
it
bigger
get?
One. Bigger. It says, I think, 5 to 6 feet. You
yeah,
know?
It's normal.
So it's bigger leaf, that real big, thick, heavy leaf on it. But looks stunning. And, of course, we also get the mini rhodies, the purple gems, mm-hmm. which are, what, about 1.5, 2 feet yeah. high, little nice-shaped balls.
Yeah.
They get a real pretty purple flower on those. So we have, I think, probably at least 5 different rhododendrons in right now, with different colors, kind of different leaf textures.
For you folks that have or are in the forest interface, I mean, the Hazley Homestead, that's probably a 20-year-old community mm-hmm. out up the spars, going up over towards Wilhoit. There's some older cabins, older homes, and the rhododendrons are literally taller than I am, and they're surrounded by deer, javelina, rabbits. And they're gorgeous, magnificent. They're underneath the canopy of that, of the pines, which is where they're best. They like the acid coming off of the needles. They like the shaded areas, that more filtered sunlight. They just naturalize and look so good. Right. If you've got a lot of pressure from animals in that canopy cover, that's a great choice. Mm-hmm. And animals are not going to bother those.
That is true. That is true. We also have a series of azaleas in called the Evermore series. Very bright orange blossoms on it, which you don't see too much orange out in the yard just naturally. Pinks and light pinks and dark pinks. Just a really nice series of azaleas. But another shade plant that I don't think is used very much around here, or people just really aren't that familiar with it, is the pieris, which is the lily of the valley shrub. Its bloom looks like, if people remember the old-fashioned lily of the valley blossom, you know, very fragrant, it's actually a little bulb, but it has that same look to it, kind of that white, what would you call it, white?
Kind of like waves of white flowers mm-hmm. that hover over top of this evergreen foliage.
Yeah, very pretty. There's Mountain Fire has the new foliage comes out kind of a red and then turns more green. It also gets a beautiful fall red to it.
That's the name, Mountain Fire.
That's the name. And then the other one is Flaming Silver. So Flaming Silver is a variegated leaf. It's kind of a white and cream leaf on it, but the same real pretty white blossoms on there. Very dynamic in those dark areas with that white blossom.
Nothing blooms and has the fragrance. Well, I guess Daphne could come close, mm-hmm. but the Lily of the Valley has got a fragrance to it. It'd be great in a container because it doesn't get too huge.
Right.
It's very showy. It's evergreen. It always looked good. But from late winter through all of spring, it's mm-hmm. got either heavy buds or in full-on bloom. And then it's just a great green plant in the summer, great mm-hmm. fall color. It's got everything going for it.
It does.
And I think that one's also animal resistive. I have to double check on that one, but I'm pretty sure that one's not going to be bothered by javelina and deer and that kind of stuff.
Bunnies,
yeah. The doggone bunnies.
Darn bunnies.
They're going to populate like crazy with all this moisture.
Oh, boy. Should make the coyotes happy.
Yeah. Don't share that with gardeners.
It's the circle of life.
Together.
They know that. So some of your just regular hollies do nicely out in those shaded areas. The one, it's been out maybe a year or two, but the honeymade holly, I just think is so pretty. It has kind of a yellow-green variegated to it. Just a really standout holly out there in the yard.
Sometimes the yellow shows up better mm-hmm. in the shaded areas than that dark
definitely.
Green. So many shade plants are very dark green. I don't know why that is. It must have got to be a photosynthesis thing or something.
Yeah.
But the brighter, lighter yellows and creams, they actually show up and pop better mm-hmm. in those darker corners of the house.
Right. The other one that's really pretty that has that variegated color is the goshiki.
Oh, yeah.
Which idea. I don't think that's a true holly.
No.
It's something else. Samantha's something, but they call it
It's a Japanese name. So it's Japanese color. For five color. Yeah.
Yeah. Very pretty. Kind of the new colors, kind of a pink blush, and it has some yellows and some greens.
Beautiful crop. I just put them on an end cap out there in the truck. They're stunning. It's the best crop of Koshiki hollies I've ever seen. And this week, after the snow melt, the camellias, another shade plant, just opened. Yeah. They're in full. I mean, each flower is like 6 inches across. Dark green foliage, loves the shade. Animals don't eat it. It's got a lot going for it. I think it's a great choice. But shade plant, you can plant those now. They're fine with the cold. They just don't, and they're fine with the sun. It's during the June month, you know, before monsoons come, they tend to get scorched. Ken and Lisa Lane and the Mountain Gardeners, be right back.
Look for more tips, tricks, and garden shortcuts through Ken's website. Podcast the show, read his weekly garden column, or follow him on Facebook and Instagram at watersgardencenter.com. That's Waters with two T's, gardencenter.com. The colors of spring are bursting at Waters 57th Spring Open House.
Talk directly to our farmers as they show off the newest flowers, brightest evergreens, and freshest new bloomers.
Friday, we show off this year's showiest plant introductions.
Saturday and Sunday, it's impromptu garden classes, sidewalk art, cornhole contest, and drawings.
Join the garden fun at Waters Garden Center's 57th Spring Open House this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 15th through 17th.
1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
Wondering why my garden looks amazing? Well, that's personal. The personal garden shopper service at Waters Garden Center, that is. Before talking with my personal shopper, I had no idea which plants would be best for me. But now my garden is bursting with flowers and buzzing with hummingbirds. Just go to watersgardencenter.com, click on Shop, and choose Personal Garden Shopper. A Waters Garden expert will pick the perfect plants for you, personally. The Personal Garden Shopper, only at Waters Garden Center in Prescott.
Welcome to The Mountain Gardener with Ken Lane. Gardening in the mountains is different. Listen to Ken's tips, tricks, and garden shortcuts guaranteed to make your gardens more beautiful than ever this year. Now for better advice that works locally, welcome your host, Ken Lane.
Now, I had mentioned at the bottom of the hour, you really need to get done with pruning. Clean things up as far as insects go. And I shared how to do that. Food. How do you get the plants where they're the healthiest? And plants are very much like people. They need their steak and potato. They need some carbs. They need some proteins. And they every once in a while, I like a Snickers bar. And so you need to feed them accordingly. And the plants, this is not as complicated as you think. Get one really good food and just give it to everything. You don't need all these special formulas. We are rarely using a heavy nitrogen-based fertilizer. These are your lawn foods, you know, 21-00. Foods are all about nitrogen, phosphorus, potash. Nitrogen, that first number, that's green growth, leaves, blades. So a lawn food's going to be 21% nitrogen because we want fresh new blades all this green all the time. If you put that onto, let's say, your butterfly bush, you'll have this ginormous bush that takes over the shed, takes over the patio, takes over the front yard, and not as many blooms. It's growing too fast. If you feed your tomatoes, you're all nitrogen, you'll have this huge plant, and it doesn't produce much fruit. That's nitrogen. So usually we're going with a little nitrogen, but more phosphorus. Phosphorus, that middle number, that produces roots, blooms, and fruits. If you want more flowers on your salvias, on your roses, on your butterfly bush, on your, you want more red flowers on your yuccas or more honeysuckle flowers, you give them some phosphorus. That's the middle number. The last number is potash. That's going to be disease resistance. That's the leaf thickness, the stem's sturdiness, the branch holding up against the wind. That's that last number. So you have nitrogen, phosphorus, potash. Those are the three numbers, and that's what they do. And what you're looking for is something that is balanced. And I would even make the suggestion, you need to give your plants a little iron and sulfur. Now, we've got a lot of iron. It naturally occurs in our soil, but our water is so alkaline. The soil is so alkaline that it locks all those minerals up, and it can't release it. So the plant can't have access to it because the alkalinity went up so high. So this is unique to this little bubble of the Southwest. Everywhere else in the country, you're adding lime. Lime sweetens the soil. Have you heard this? So that's a unique thing that you'll see on HGTV, Fine Garden Magazine. All the big national brands are going to say, oh, lime, now's the time to put lime. Do not do that to don't torture your plants that way in the mountains of Arizona. You will kill your plants. Or they'll be so suffered, they'll be so thin, they'll be so stressed that they won't grow for years. If you add lime to your garden, that raises the pH. You're already at the upper limits, and if you raise it more, you can kill plants or stress them out. You folks that have had hot tubs and pools, you know you're always measuring your pH. What's the alkalinity of that? How much acid or alkalinity is in that water? If you get it wrong, you get in the hot tub, you get in the lap pool, and when you get done, you feel like your skin's crawling off you. You just itch, and you just need to take a shower and just de-cleanse yourself. It's too much. It's not so much the chlorine, it's more of the pH is off, more acidic or too alkaline. Your plants are the same way. Their roots literally the bark wants to come right off of those plants. They're irritated beyond belief. They can't absorb the nutrients. They get real yellow. They'll stop blooming. They'll shed their fruits. These are all indications that the pH went too high in the mountains of Arizona. This is, again, I'm talking about here, unique area of the Southwest. This does not apply to anywhere else but right here. So with that being said, I make my own fertilizer for the mountains, and I front load quite a bit of sulfur. I think 2.5% or 3% of that formula is sulfur, because I know that's how our water is. I know that's how it affects the soil, and I know if I lower the pH just a little bit, the plants will load up with more flowers, have larger flowers, better fragrance. That's sulfur. I go so far as in my own gardens, I put all-purpose plant food. It's 744 all-purpose. I spread it over everything. I just take my hand spreader and just walk around the yard and go, here, guys, just have fun. Eat up. Bloom for me. Become green. Be fabulous this spring. And they are. Right after I get done doing that, I also take a bag of soil sulfur. Yes, that food has some in it, but I want to front load the gardens as they wake up, especially after all this winter moisture we've had. I really want to up the fragrance, up the color, and so I'll, in addition, add some additional sulfur. I only do this in the spring. Just the first of spring, I add the all-purpose food and sulfur, and I've done the entire yard so far. Okay, everything from evergreens to my perennials to the lawn, everything has had all-purpose plant food, a 744 balance mix. In fact, that mix, the primary ingredient is cottonseed meal. And cottonseed meal is a good nitrogen source, has some phosphorus, but mainly it also lowers the pH as well. It's got some bird guano. It's got some bird poop in it that helps things grow, wake up fast. So when they start to leaf out, you get larger leaves on your maples, sycamores, willows. They'll get larger, better canopy because of the bird poop, basically. So can you say poop over the airwaves? Bird guano. There you go. So that's bird guano, cottonseed meal, some iron, some sulfur, and that you spread that out. It's pelletized. It's all natural. In addition, I put the soil sulfur down. Now, for certain things, here's one, my last step. Now, this is just what I do. Now we're really getting deep here. This is like gardening 301. We're at junior, senior level stuff. In addition, for things that are, I really want some blooms. So these are my spring blooming autumn sage, my lilacs, the forsythias, the crepe myrtles that will be blooming late spring, early summer, rose of Sharon, butterfly bush, things you want to flower or things that you want a fruit on, fruit trees, blackberries, raspberries, grapes. I also take the extra step, and I don't do this for the entire yard, just things that bloom. I want more flowers. I want them to be rock stars. I mean, I want them to be, wow, how did Ken ever grow that kind of echinacea? I can't believe his gallardias are that gorgeous. Look at those roses. I want that kind of statement when you come to visit my house. So for those plants, I'll give them the all-purpose food. I give them the soil sulfur. And then I'll get just a bag, like a medium-sized bag of super phosphate. Now, super phosphate is zero. 15-0. Remember nitrogen, phosphorus, potash. It's all that middle number, all flowers and blooms. 0, 15, 0. This is kind of the Snickers bar of plant foods. They absorb it in and the plants take it up. Now the book says, make sure you work in your all phosphorus forms. They're not water soluble. I find it works if I just throw it on the ground and it works just fine. I never work my foods or soil sulfurs or superphosphate in the ground. I just put it in the hand spreader. I walk around the yard and I just spread it out like fairy dust underneath the plants. Yeah, drip line. That the outer branches are where most of the food is actually picked up. I don't focus on the trunks. I focus on the outer areas, this big ring of a big tree or a big shrub. I want the feeder roots are out there. I'm putting that superphosphate around there and I don't work it in. I actually don't want to disturb the roots underneath there. I just put it on and I just let the rains, the snows, the water, the irrigation all work it in the ground. And I find it works just fine. I will have roses that are, showstoppers with that formula, that 3-3 mix. It just makes, it's a game changer. For new plants, it's critical because you need more growth. You need more roots on that. Well, fertilize them, give them some plant food, and they'll bulk up. They'll take that food, store it up in their root structure, and they'll use it to form new flowers and more stems, more branches, more canes, more vines, whatever you're growing. So that formula, all-purpose plant food, soil sulfur, just to lower the pH so things activate faster, better, and super phosphate for things that you really want to be bloom. Just really bright colors on those flowers, bigger fruits. That's going to be a game changer in your yard this spring. Be right back.
You're listening to local garden expert Ken Lane, the owner of Waters Garden Center. He can be found throughout the week at Waters Garden Center, located in Prescott, 1815 Iron Springs Road. Thanks for tuning in to the Mountain Gardener. Growing up in Prescott, we knew spring was here when my grandmother's lilacs bloomed. I'm Lisa Waters Lane, and my grandmother would be thrilled with the new Bloomerang Purple Lilacs at Waters Garden Center. They don't just bloom once in spring, they bloom again in summer. Mine bloomed 3 times last year, making spring last well into fall, and just $29.99. Come check out all the heavenly new sights and scents that are making this spring the most beautiful ever. Lilacs like Grandma used to grow and better. Waters Garden Center in Prescott.
I remember as though it was yesterday. Should we be open Sundays or not? The revolution came after church social. After the fellowship, a friend was heading to the box store to get some plants because Waters wasn't open. Sunday was his only day to garden that week, just like it was yesterday. Waters Garden Center. It's open on Sunday from 9 to 5, with plant experts ready to advise on any subject. My name is Ken Lane, owner of Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road, here in Prescott.
You've tuned in to The Mountain Gardener with local garden expert Ken Lane. Join him each week as he answers timely garden questions that are sure to make a difference in your gardens. Now welcome your host, Ken Lane.
Next weekend, this is going to be a big deal. There's very few companies that make it 57 years in business. So how Ken and Lisa Lane came to own Waters Garden Center. Lisa is a Waters. And so she grew up in the business. Her father started Waters Garden Center. It was the very first garden center in northern Arizona. There were still some down on Baseline, down in Phoenix, some growing operations, but no retail garden centers existed at that time. In the 60s, 1962, March of 1962, Waters Garden Center began, and it started small. It started with, rental trucks, borrowed trailers, small loads, and you'd have to go get the plants from Phoenix or from California and bring them over, so vegetables and shrubs and roses. Anymore, the towns in northern Arizona is all grown up, and so we just have traction, so we can get the semis to come our way. So it's just, it's easier. Lisa and I, we go and fly and walk the farm. So we get the best crop of peaches or apples or maples or aspens. We get the best spruce trees, especially important with evergreens. You don't walk those fields, they haven't root pruned that evergreen spruce, pine, fir. You'll plant it, and within 6 months, it's dead. So it didn't grow up correctly in the field. Well, if you walk the fields, you can tell. You can see the root structure of that plant as they ball and burlap it and put it in a pot, bring it in. Perennials. There's ugly crops, and there's spectacular crops. Well, we want the spectacular. There's always, out of 100 plants, there's always that 10% factor that's, oh my gosh, I can't believe how beautiful. There's the 10% that's, why are these even still here? The dumpster's just 20 feet away. Use it. Then there's the everything in between. We want that cream of the crop, the nicer stuff. And so we're starting to ship that now. We have a spring open house next Saturday, Sunday. Actually starts Friday night. We're showcasing the new plants Friday night with a class. We've got our growers coming. So the guys that actually introduced the new penstemon, they've never been seen. They'll be here this next weekend. New salvia colors, new brand new repeat blooming lilacs. The farmers that grew those, we invite them here. And most of them, they don't get to see the public very often. They spend all their time in greenhouses and laboratories and fields and watching irrigation and fertilization and talking anywhere out in the fields. They love coming to talk to the people that are enjoying their plants. You can talk to them all day long. It's just a pleasure to watch them interact with consumers. It's super. Then Lisa and I will have them all over at our house Friday and Saturday night. We cater dinners and show off the gardens. And then we get to pick their brains just because we're friends. We love plants. Get to hear what's coming up, the new plants. There's actually new things in the pipeline, some exciting new plants this year and next year that are coming online they'll be game changers for the Southwest. Not just the regular old high maintenance colored stuff, but some new drought hardy introductions that are coming that are easier to care for that we just haven't seen before. You haven't had access. And folks don't realize there's people that walk, they actually travel the planet. They'll be at the 5,000 foot level of the Himalayas looking for new plant life that they can pick the seed or harvest the roots. They ship it back to their farms and they'll create this new thing and see how it adapts. They've got test gardens. And then about 5 to 7 years later, we actually get to see the fruits of their labor, so to speak. And then being a person of influence, we get to introduce these new varieties. There are always a select few that get to kind of start out. The crops are slow, and then they ramp up, and then they become mass-produced, 5 years later after that. We get to see the new varieties. It's actually so exciting. And next weekend, you get to talk to all the growers and just kind of see the new introductions. I encourage you, consider this a personal invite next weekend to come hang out at Waters Garden Center's 57th Spring Open House. I remember as though it was yesterday. Should we be open Sundays or not? The revolution came after church social. After the fellowship, a friend was heading to the box store to get some plants because Waters wasn't open. Sunday was his only day to garden that week, just like it was yesterday. Waters Garden Center. It's open on Sunday from 9 to 5 with plant experts ready to advise on any subject. My name is Ken Lane, owner of Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road here in Prescott.
The colors of spring are bursting at Waters' 57th Spring Open House.
Talk directly to our farmers as they show off the newest flowers, brightest evergreens, and freshest new bloomers.
Friday, we show off this year's showiest plant introductions.
Saturday and Sunday, it's impromptu garden classes, sidewalk art, cornhole contest, and drawings.
Join the garden fun at Waters Garden Center's 57th Spring Open House this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 15th through 17th.
1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
If you want a more fruitful garden, increase success in your landscape that just feels better, then tune in every week to The Mountain Gardener. Years of tips, tricks, and garden shortcuts are guaranteed to make your gardens nicer than ever. Listen to this podcast or read Ken's weekly garden column by visiting watersgardencenter.com. That's Waters with two T's, gardencenter.com. Thanks for tuning in.